Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Where are we? So we're in Beausoleil, just outside Monaco, just down the road from Nice. Nice sunny day. Well, to be fair, it's like this a lot of the time, really. But we're just at the team house as well, so it's our little base.
There's a load of us based down here, so this is where we meet every day for training, and we've got a whole support structure down here.
And who are you?
I'm Chris Froome.
I'm Garen Thomas. Who are you?
Matt Barbette. Huh. You knew that already.
Of course.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Before we begin properly, this episode was recorded back in May just outside Monaco and just before the Critérium du Dauphiné race where Chris Froome suffered an awful crash. The injuries that Chris suffered meant that he wouldn't be able to compete in the 2019 Tour de France. Chris, Geraint and I still talk about many other things, as you'll hear, but I wanted to put into context just a few of the questions and answers that were relevant at the time of recording but aren't quite as relevant now. I hope you do still enjoy this episode of Home Roads, and I'd like to wish Chris the very best for his recovery. Thanks a lot.
Right, let's get pedalling. You brought your own bike. I am on... Whose bike am I on?
Diego Rosa.
Time
trial bike.
I think I'm probably a little bit bigger than him, but it'll do for the time being. Let me just get in an easier gear as well. It's going to be slightly embarrassing if I'm huffing and puffing and sweating away. Gee, I want to start by asking about living in this part of the world. You live in Monaco. Mm. How long has Monaco been home for?
6.5 years now. It's flown by.
I came here in 2011. And I've just felt that since then my career has just gone from strength to strength. I mean, every day when you're riding this area and all these climbs, it's just... It's got a way of just building up in your legs, I guess. Just there's almost no flat roads around here, so you are just climbing, going up or down all day, every day. And I think it's got an amazing effect. Everyone I've spoken to who comes here just says the same thing. It's just it takes their cycling to a new level.
Yeah. Why did you move here in particular?
I was living down in Italy before. But the team was setting up a base here, and it made sense to be close to the team.
Yeah, I'm pretty confident that if I hadn't have moved down here when I did, I definitely wouldn't have won the Tour last year. It's just so good for training, you know, the roads, the weather, obviously. You can't win the Tour living in Wales, basically. You need those climbs, like, daily, and just the people you're training with as well. Like, when I first moved out, training on a daily basis with Froome and Richie Port, who, well, they still are, but at the time they were like the best climbers around. And that just pushes you every day and sort of like drags you out, and you're always sort of trying to improve and you know, to become as good as them, basically. So I think those three factors make it an amazing place, and the support we have as well, like I said, with being here at the team house, there's always a car. Team car following for training and for efforts and all that type of stuff. So, it's perfect.
Who do you ride out with when you tend to go for rides that aren't on your own? Because a lot of people who aren't hugely familiar with pro cycling think you probably stay in your teams all the time, but you don't. You do sort of socialise with riders from other teams that you've perhaps
raced alongside before, like Richie Porte, for example?
Yeah, so in general, you work in 3-day blocks. So you have an efforts day, a long general, another efforts day, and then an easy day. And the general ride, where you just sort of like, yeah, ride your bike for 6 hours or whatever, you can go out. I've done a few rides with Richie recently, Valgeren, Caleb Ewan, Renshaw, a few of those guys. So,
but all types of riders, sprinters as well.
Yeah.
Just for the social element.
And it's just, like I say, when you're going out and you're just riding your bike, it's nice to just, see some other people as well, you know. You're with the team so much. Saying that, I still go out with Wout quite a lot and things as well, and Luke. But, it's good to mix it up a bit.
I mean, it's nice to know that there are other pros around, and it's always nice for company sometimes, especially on sort of longer, easier days. But I do a lot of training on my own as well.
Yeah. Was it a bit of a shock to the system moving to France? Have you picked up the lingo in your time here?
I'd been learning French from schoolboy days.
And, yeah.
So it wasn't completely foreign to me. And actually, we were right on the border of Italy as well. So speaking Italian, you can get by in Italian as well. So it wasn't really a big issue for me coming here, and obviously having Italian and French made it a lot easier.
Well, you mentioned growing up there as a schoolboy, and you know, everyone knows that you grew up in Africa.
Yeah.
Does that still feel like home when you go back there? Do you go back much?
I don't go back that often, no, to be honest. And it's been a while since I've been to Kenya, where I grew up. Yeah. Good 5-6 years. Obviously with the family now, it gets two little kids, it gets harder moving around and traveling long distance. But it's strange. I mean, this is feeling more like home.
Is it?
At the moment. I mean, I've been here almost 10 years now. Africa certainly does feel like it's getting further and further away.
Does it really? It feels like a long way away.
Yeah, now. It does.
And what's it like actually living in Monaco? Does it ever feel a little bit claustrophobic? Because it's a pretty small place.
It is small, but I grew up in like kind of close to the centre of Cardiff as well. It doesn't really feel, well, it is quite a bit different. But, you know, I kind of treat it like, well, how I lived in Cardiff, really. I don't really go out for food that much, or definitely not out drinking. So it's whenever I'm here, I'm on it. So I'm kind of like, you know, you do your training, you go home, you have your lunch, and then you're on the sofa, really. And we've got British TV, and so that's the main thing. But
what we've been watching recently?
Line of Duty, of course.
Yeah. Who hasn't? Game of Thrones. You into Game of Thrones?
I am, but I kind of stopped around series 4, 5, I think. So I need to catch up.
You miss all the good stuff.
Yeah, but that's about it then, really. So then when I go back to Cardiff then, more in the off-season and Christmas time, that's when you can, well, enjoy the other side of life, really.
What about training in other places? Because I know last winter, the winter before you won the tour as well, you went training in California. That must have sort of changed things up a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. Like, it was kind of stumbled upon it in a way, really. Like, I didn't want to ride. I'd ridden Tour Down Under for about 6 years, and I wanted to do something a bit different, and I like to get away. And it's nice being away from Europe, because you're kind of a different time zone, you're in your own little world almost. And I spoke to a few guys, and LA seemed to be a decent option, so I thought, oh, give it a go. And the first time I went was the start of 2017, and then it worked really well, and it's perfect for January, you know. It's climbs that are long enough to do your efforts that time of year. There's a good bit of flat as well for some time trial bike stuff. So it worked well. So I went back last year again, and I'll probably go next year again as well now.
Yeah, and I guess there as well, it's not like the place is full of pros. They probably don't give you a second look. You know, if you're riding along, you'll see George Clooney driving the other way in a minute, aren't they? Or someone else slightly more famous, so you don't get the hassle.
Yeah, and it's actually pretty quiet. Like, once you're in the hills and stuff and out the back, it's because obviously you stay right on the edge of town. I'm not like in the middle of LA or anything.
No.
So you're straight out, and the roads are actually quite quiet. There's a few busier roads, but it's pretty easy to avoid them, so it's ideal.
And do you enjoy the travelling, both with the training and with the racing, or does it take its toll?
Yeah, the travelling is the worst bit. So it can be just quite tiring, you know, because I'm never in one place more than 2 weeks, you know. I think, well, LA was the place I was for the longest period of time, really, in the whole year. So, and that's like 3-4 weeks. So, it's just a time away from, like, my wife and friends and family as well, which is the hardest bit. And then the travelling, but it's nice, though. It's not a bad life when you get to race all over Europe and, well, all over the world. We see a lot, even though a lot of the time it is just the race in hotels.
Yeah.
But, yeah, can't complain.
Favourite places? Apart from Cardiff?
I really like Australia. It's kind of like the UK, but sunny, similar to LA, really. There's so much going on. But Italy's really nice as well. There's always, like, you know, small little road that kind of goes off and a steep little thing or a twisty descent. And there's a lot going on. I spent a bit of time in Tuscany with the academy and really enjoyed that time. So, yeah, Italy's good.
Do you miss Cardiff? Do you miss Wales at all?
Yeah, definitely. I went back recently just for like 2 days, and because you're back so rarely, it's just so busy then. But it's just, yeah, it's home, isn't it? It's where you grow up, and I'm looking forward to moving back at some stage. But
that's definitely on the agenda, is it?
Yeah.
That you feel like it's temporary being here?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, like Cardiff and Wales, the UK is my home, and that's where I grew up, and where I'll always move back to, for sure.
Who knows where I'll be when I end. I mean, I'd like to stay involved in the sport, and obviously being involved in the sport requires being over here in Europe as well, so certainly no plans to really go anywhere at the moment.
Yeah. So tell me about the surrounding area. Which are the climbs that you like to sort of train on the most and test yourself on the most?
Well, I mean, you've got so many climbs. I mean, the one everyone knows is the Col de la Madone.
Yeah.
Which is literally on our doorstep. It takes us 10-15 minutes to get to the bottom and half an hour to get up. But that's probably the most unobstructed climb you've got around here, where you can just go and empty your legs if you want to do a really big effort.
Yeah, it's a perfect climb for that.
It is.
Because of the gradient, because of the length of it. And it's quite quiet as well, Madone, isn't it?
It is. I mean, you've probably come across more cyclists than anything else on there.
Yeah, well, a few goats, I think, you occasionally see on there.
A few goats, sheepdogs. But
The strange thing about Madone is that the races never go up there.
It is strange. I don't think I've ever seen a race go up there.
No.
It's exciting with the start of the Tour de France coming here next year. I think that's definitely going to be great for the area. And cycling, I mean, it is just going to start the GC off with a bang.
Yeah.
Which is quite unique as well.
Let's have a look at last year, because you try the double whammy of the Giro, then the Tour. Giro, well, why don't you talk us through the Giro? Because in terms of winning a Grand Tour, it was breathtaking.
Yeah, I think it definitely was one of my most spectacular Grand Tour wins. I think just in the way I did it and coming from such a deficit and turning the whole race around in the last few days. But that's the Giro d'Italia. I mean, that's been done before at the Giro. I mean, it is the race. It's the race to do it.
Yeah.
If you can't really see someone doing that at the Tour de France, because it's a lot more controlled. It's generally, you don't have the same kind of stages to be able to do that in the Tour de France. Yeah. But at the Giro, I think it was just the perfect combination coming together on that day, and being so far back, I almost went into that stage with the attitude of, I'm just going to go all out here, all or nothing kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it was a gamble that worked.
Was it liberating to be able to race like that, rather than, like you say, in a more controlled manner?
It was pretty cool. I mean, it got me sort of all the sort of feelings of being a kid again, all the emotions of just bike racing at its best. You just take it on and go. It's not really that calculated. It's just a big effort, and it was pretty cool riding like that. I have to admit.
Because you know the things that people say, the people who didn't like Team Sky or might, you know, sort of take against you is like, oh, you know, they look at the numbers all the time and they control the race and that sort of thing. So it was a bit of a kind of riposte to them that you can just effectively ride by feel and push yourself to get away.
People have been saying that for years, but I mean, I've won stages of Grand Tours in descents. I've attacked in crosswinds on the flats and gone with Sagan to the finish. Yeah. So I mean, there's just no foundation for that.
But you must enjoy it more when it's a bit more marauding like that. When you're descending with Sagan, and you know who is such a great bike handler himself as well. You know, do you dwell on those moments? Do you think back to those kind of bits of racing, or once they're gone, are they gone?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, those are special moments for sure that you treasure as a bike rider, where you remember sort of what you've done in the sport. And but at the same time, it's a bit strange for me now, because I'm still obviously in it in the moment, and I'm still looking to try and achieve so much more. I don't really want to allow myself to sort of look back too much, if that makes sense. Like I'm still more concentrated on what's to come and trying to get ready for the next tour, if I'm honest. So I'm not really someone who tends to look back that much.
Let's look back one more time though to the tour last year. And what a unique situation really, in terms of two genuine GC contenders on the same team, Team Sky as it was then, now Team Ineos. What was it like being in the middle of that?
I felt as if I was in an incredibly fortunate position to have G there, because if he wasn't, we'd be playing catch up to Dumoulin, and I'd be left trying to explain to my team why we weren't leading the race. So I mean, it was great that G was there. I mean, I was coming off doing four Grand Tours in a row, having won the first three. I was nailed. So it was great that G was there to basically pick up the reins. And he rode a flawless race at the tour, so in a way that almost took the pressure off me a little bit, and at least kept the win in the team. So I mean, it was tough at the time. Obviously, I mean, the personal ambition, I wanted to be winning, I wanted to be there at my best, but I wasn't. So I mean, the next best thing for me was to have a teammate in the yellow jersey. So
yes,
and G filled that role.
I just wanted one clean run at it, really, and just have a grand tour where nothing majorly went wrong, and just so I knew I could get into some top shape. It's just not having that bad luck, basically. And then, yeah, it all came together last year pretty nice.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned, We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
I mean, more than pretty nicely. It wasn't just a great win for you. It was one of the great wins in the tour in living memory because of the way you went about it. I mean, winning on Alpe d'Huez and then winning the GC overall is not a usual way of doing things. Some people will give their eye teeth just to win on Alpe d'Huez, for example. So doing it that way was incredibly special. But the thing is, that both those Grand Tours, the Giro and then the Tour, you weren't the outright leader. So was that an added sort of layer of, you know, not concern, but something to think about, I suppose?
Yeah, it wasn't sort of as straightforward, I guess, from the outside. But, you know, in my head, it was just about just get there in the best shape I can and then you just race the race and whatever happens, happens. And if you got the legs, you got the legs and you're there in the final or you don't, basically. And, yeah, it was just like a big sort of snowball effect. You know, I won that stage La Rossière and then obviously, like you say, Alpe d'Huez the next day in the yellow jersey, and it was just like unreal, and it just sort of just growing in confidence through it, and it was just the best place I'd been in physically and mentally, I think, in my whole career.
Was the mental strength that came from having a good start to the race what clinched it? Because your physical ability has never been any doubt, but in this instance, the confidence that you got from how well it went on in the first week or two, do you think that's what gave you the difference?
I think so. I think the main thing for me was just getting through that first week like unscathed and no mishaps, and that was all good. And then, yeah, the two stage wins were great for obviously the morale and the confidence, and it just a snowball from there, I guess. And I was just enjoying it, which is kind of, you'd think the closer you get to Paris when you're leading, the more the pressure would build, but it was kind of the opposite almost, and just able to really soak it all up and really enjoy leading the race and being in that form.
You know, people listening will be fascinated to know what it was like in the bubble of what was Team Sky at the time, now Team Ineos, of course. What was it like? I'm guessing that you and Chris and everyone else were still getting along, even though you were both going for the GC.
Yeah. Well, I wrote a book about it, so you can buy my book.
Why don't you sum it up for me?
It was... for me, it was kind of just as it always was, really. Me and Froome were, you know, there was no friction. It wasn't awkward. We were both still just honest and open how we wanted to race and what we wanted to do. And, like, you know, he said he wanted to attack at this stage or that stage, and it was fine. At least he was, yeah, we both just knew what we were doing, you know. It wasn't like we had our own little agenda and he didn't tell me something and then he went off and did it. And so, and the team, the morale was great amongst us all. And, I think that was the main reason how that I won and Froome was third as well, was the fact that there was none of that animosity or any sort of awkwardness or anything.
Do you find it easy to separate out the personal and the professional? And I think you look at cycling in general as a sport, it's compared to any other, people are able to do that, you know, sacrifice themselves for other people on a daily basis.
Yeah, like obviously that's a given, that's what happens in the sport, but I think for sure it was a big sort of hats off to Froome for, you know, he'd won it four times, he's won six Grand Tours, he obviously wants to win his fifth, and it was, he could have quite easily sort of got a bit stroppy or, you know, thrown his toys out the pram and made it sort of a bit more awkward, but it was anything but.
Definitely. And I think a lot of people sort of misunderstand that. I mean, they'd see it as, surely I must be, there must be tension between us, and because we're both racing for the same thing, but it just isn't. It doesn't exist, and we're good mates. So happy days. As long as the victory stays in the team, we crack on.
And I think the wider population don't realise how long you've known each other, because you were both at Barlow World together, weren't you, in the late
2000s? 100%, yeah. We did start on the same team together, Team Barlow World, back in Italy. And yeah, obviously, we both came to Sky in the same year, in 2010. So we've followed each other's careers, successes, difficulties all along the way, and been a part of that.
What do you remember of him back then?
I think we were both completely different riders at that time. I think we were both a fair bit chubbier, less ambitious, just trying to make it really as a new professional in the sport.
Still sort of have to pinch myself really, because it's one of them. It's not that I didn't think I could beat the guys there in just a race, you know. I thought I could, or be an equal. But it's just the fact the race was the Tour de France. And yeah, it's a race that, like, I started watching as soon as I started cycling, and what the reason I fell in love with the sport, really. And so to win it is just crazy, especially when I look back at 2007, the first time I rode. You know, I was still, well, I just turned 21, track rider, fat, and just to get finish the race just took every ounce of energy I had. So to go from that to winning, like 11 years later, was just mad.
But if I'd won the Tour last year, it might have been an option to look at the Vuelta and say, right, okay, I've done three consecutively, but let's try and do three consecutively in the same year. Yeah. That could have been the next goal.
Because you remember Oleg Tinkoff, I think, was offering €1 million to anybody who gave it a go.
I think anyone who managed to do it
deserves the money.
Not just gave it a go. I think you had to win all three, which takes some doing, as I found out.
What's it like now? Like you say, we're on the eve of the Tour again. It's not far away. What are the final preparations like? And you certainly weren't fat when you were at Barlow World, but, you know, what are the preparations like in terms of getting down to race weight, in terms of putting the finishing touches to your climbing and all that kind of thing?
Yeah, I think the weight is the hardest bit by far. I find it, well, it's not easy, but I enjoy pushing myself and doing all the efforts and doing 6 hours a day. And there's just, that's that sadistic side of me that enjoys that. But it's the restricting yourself, not having what you want to eat all the time, and no alcohol, obviously, and just that whole sort of, just monotonous, like you don't starve yourself, you still eat, obviously, and it's just eating the right things at the right times, but it's still super healthy stuff. And
there's a lot of fasted riding. Do you go out having eaten nothing?
We go out, do like low carb rides where we have an omelette before going out, so you know, there's not much energy you get from an omelette, so it's kind of a bit like that. But it makes it all worthwhile when you get a big result at the end of it. And having done that now, and I kind of know if I commit and do tick all the boxes, then at least I'm in the best shape I can be. And, you know, you could go to the Tour this year, I could end up 11th. You know, there's just no saying how good everyone else is going to be. But as long as I'm in the best shape, then that's all I can do.
We're sat here on Kickers. How has the training gone over the past few months? Because I know you vary it. I know there's quite a bit of indoor time looking at the numbers, and in particular getting ready for time trialing and that sort of thing. So how has it gone?
Good. I think it's obviously had a big off season, a lot bigger than normal. Almost twice the time off I normally have. And
no regrets though?
No, I was kind of, you don't win the Tour every day, do you? So you've got to enjoy it and make the most of it. I certainly did that. But from sort of, well, it's just progressively got more and more serious, and fully on it since, well, January really. And it was nice to get a little podium result in Romandy. That was a nice little boost for the confidence, really, after, you know, a lot of hard work to get up there again. So certainly improving, and certainly feel like I'm on track.
How would you say the preparation this year has gone so far compared to previous years when you've won?
I think it's a very similar sort of position that I'm in now. I think I started off the season maybe a bit eager over in Colombia. Did a little bit too much soon and had to back off. I got sick. I think now because of that, I had to start almost draw a line, start again, and I've had just a steady build up now. But I think having this one goal, the Tour de France, being ready for the Tour de France has been really good for me in a way. I think it's kept me a lot fresher and it just allowed me just to crack on and do what I need to do to be ready for July.
How does it feel being in a completely different colour now, under the colours of Team Ineos rather than Sky? You've gone from blue to red.
It is strange. It's more watching other races though. When I was watching the finishes in Yorkshire, it's kind of like you forget which colour we were in, you know? I like the red as well. It's kind of a bit like Wales, so.
Gee, really good to see you again. Looking in good form. I'm melting here on someone else's time trial bike. Have a great tour.
Thanks.
Chris, lovely to talk to you. Thanks for, well, we didn't ride on them, but riding around or near your home roads on the kicker. Really appreciate it.
Nice one. Cheers.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.